This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear, at length, from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry, with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. I know a lot of our listeners fire up episodes while they're stuck in traffic or taking the dog for a walk. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind landmark projects. You can find that at dsprojects.podbean.com. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Robin Carlisle is Global Head of Creative for Framestore Labs, a UK-based creative technology shop that specializes in making beautiful and cinematic real-time visuals. The Labs is part of a larger company that has been doing amazing visuals for years. For example, that's Framestore's work in movies like Gravity, which somehow imagineers what happens when satellite debris takes out a space station. Carlisle's company is involved in all kinds of projects, and recently, he's done work that falls squarely in the digital signage and interactive signage buckets. That includes work done for the London Stock Exchange, Morgan Stanley, and Ford. We connected by Skype, with Carlisle joined by the company's production head, Johnny Dixon, just in case the questions got into the technical weeds, but they didn't. All right, guys, thanks for joining me by Skype here. I've got Robin Carlisle and Johnny Dixon from Framestore Labs, and I wanted to talk to you guys primarily about data visualization, but before we dive too deep into that, can you give me a sense of what Framestore Labs is and what the larger company is? Because when I start looking at your site, Framestore is into all kinds of things, and you guys did the visuals for Gravity and all kinds of things.
Yeah, so I guess it's easiest to start with the root of it, Framestore. That has been doing visual effects for a long time over television and film. Started on television, music videos, and then moved into film. I'm not sure about the timeline of this, but we're talking, you know, two or three decades of visual effects post-production. And I think Framestore's kind of an interesting company because they're not just rooted in one kind of output format. They're thinking about where they can apply visual effects and the experience of making great imagery onto different platforms. And that's where Framestore Labs comes in. It's that we're taking what the kind of the core Framestore experience is and applying that to different platforms. Which could be, you know, it could be anywhere out of home. It could be in a museum or a gallery or a giant LED screen somewhere. Or, you know, we're finding that other people are finding us, and it's expanding at a rate. And people are calling us from different places. Like, you know, digital signage is not something that we were even looking at 3 years ago. It kind of found us.
Uh huh. And is it much of your business now, or is it something that's very opportunistic? And if it comes along, you've started to develop some chops around it.
I mean, I guess film is still, if we're talking about numbers, it's still got the most people working on it,
and sure.
Television advertising, it's still big. But you know, as a company, we're looking at all avenues, all as serious business. They're not opportunistic. It's you know, we're moving into lots of different areas, and sometimes those areas find us and sometimes we find them, and you know, they're serious concerns, and we're looking to make them bigger and grow them.
Right.
And not just jump ship to whatever is the latest cool thing.
And by nature, is the Framestore Labs part of it? Does that mean you're something of a spin-off or a Skunk Works kind of operation where you're kind of dabbling with things, or is it its own entity related to the larger company?
I mean, it started as a department. It's a kind of it's a Skunk Works, you could call it that. We were dabbling with things and, you know, seeing where we could apply Framestore expertise and integrate other kind of experience within Framestore. And, you know, it's integral. It's integral as as everything else is within Framestore now. It's a part of the business. It's a part of the way that people think about where their kind of visual output could go to. And it's just one of those. There's lots of different outputs now. It's a very forward-thinking company in that way.
Right. I would imagine that things like digital signage have started to come up a lot more for you because the ways that you can create a digital canvas have really expanded, and you now have high resolution outdoor LED displays. You have very high resolution indoor displays that aren't just, you know, video walls of a bunch of LCDs. There's projection mapping. There's fine pitch LED that you can apply to just about anywhere. So I would imagine in terms of when you're starting to develop a brief for a client, you've got a lot of potential arrows in the quiver that you can use to kind of create this visual experience.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you said. It's digital signage, I think, from what we've seen, used to be fairly off the shelf. You're playing back content, you're just playing back some videos, maybe you have some lightly kind of interactive or dynamic content. But it started, you know, as signage, you know, it's in the title. Uh-huh. But as you're saying, you know, now we're using computers rather than integrated kind of closed box solutions. And you've got, you know, graphics cards that can output to huge canvases. The canvases are getting bigger. They're tight pitch LED, as you say, you know, you're talking like 4K, 6K, 8K and beyond. And computing power is the way to do that, not off the shelf. You know, these are, you know, custom solutions are the way to get the best result. And we found that there were, we were doing, before digital signage, we were doing kind of data viz and interactive and kind of dynamic content, but it was on a smaller scale for smaller institutions or galleries. And we found we could apply that to the larger canvases because they were missing that. You know, the larger canvases were very simple. If you go to Times Square, you'll just see looping videos everywhere. You know, mostly it's very, very simple. And, you know, at the end of the day, what we can put up on those screens is only determined by the computing power that you put behind it and the creativity you put through that computing power. So moving into digital signage I won't say it's been easy, but in terms of the pixels and the graphics that you can put up there, it's a logical step. It's the complexities come from things we hadn't encountered before, like it's a different ball game in terms of kind of legal and security, and that's been the
right.
That's been a larger learning experience for us. It's a bigger game.
Yeah, all of a sudden you have to worry about things like weather and ambient daylight and restrictions and unions and everything else.
Yeah, exactly. You're talking 5-year contracts and service level agreements, and you know that's been the kind of big change for us, I think, in Framestore Labs is how to apply what we're doing already, how to apply that to things of that scale, to things that are kind of quite serious large installations.
You mentioned that you'd already been working on data visualization. What sorts of projects were you doing, and you know, what was the output?
God, that's going back a while now. I mean, we're talking small things, small data viz for, you know, galleries, because this kind of dynamic work and, you know, interesting visuals used to happen in galleries in Shoreditch or Brooklyn. Uh-huh. This was where the kind of interesting graphics and the interactive work was.
So were these graphics that you would look at and you would understand what's going on, or were they art?
I mean, we've never said we've made art. I mean, we kind of, you know, some people are making data art, which is just, you know, they're using the data to make interesting pictures.
But God knows what you're looking at.
But yeah, who knows what that is? It doesn't tell a story. You know, we kind of look at it as directing data, I think, to create a visual, kind of a cinematic sort of visual. The client has a requirement about what the story that they want to tell. Mm-hmm. And we direct that data and make the story around that. So, in, you know, it's not pure data viz and it's not data art. It's kind of, you know, it's a commercial operation, taking that data and directing it in a way that a commercial, like a, say an advert director or a film director would create content that meant something to people. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean? Because data viz, people are developing data languages and data visualization languages, but I don't know what half of it means when I look at it. It's a bunch of circles and stuff and data art. They're making lovely pictures, but I don't think a lot of it means anything. Some of it's insightful, but I don't think it tells you a particular story. So that's where I think we've filled a niche in between data art and data viz, mm-hmm. in between, you know, the kind of gallery work and the very dry digital signage work.
Which is just charts and numbers.
Charts, numbers, exactly. People aren't interested in that, really. It's trying to get people's attention, and it's trying to hold their attention, and it's trying to tell the story in a way that they can relate to. There's no point in having a chart and number if it doesn't actually give an emotional reaction or trigger a thought or a process in their brain.
Yeah, there's a guy, Mike Pell, who works for Microsoft, who I had at a conference that I organized for a couple of years, and he's a data viz guy, and he talked about seeing data visualization work that was clearly beautiful, but he said what really needed to happen was something that was beautifully clear.
Yeah, clarity is the thing. Our clients talk about that a lot, and they're right to talk about it. Some of the work that I've seen is exactly what you're saying. It's beautiful stuff, but I'm not sure it says anything. It's using data to make imagery. It's just, it becomes a raw material, like the paint in a painting.
Right. So let's talk about the Ford Hub that you guys were central to in New York. Can you kind of run down what that was all about and how digital signage applied in there?
Yeah. So that was... Well, still is rather. It's a store in the Oculus shopping center. What's it called?
Westfield.
Westfield shopping center. And I wouldn't say that was data viz, I guess. I mean, I guess I'm quite precious with the term data viz. It comes quite segmented, doesn't it? I wouldn't call that data viz. I would call that it's visualization. So that is about, yeah, it's digital storytelling. It's about creating a visual that tells the story that Ford wants you to understand. Mm-hmm. So Ford have a vision about where they're going in the future in terms of smart mobility, and how they're moving away from just purely talking about cars, and they're moving towards smart mobility. And they want people to understand that, to see that they've made that pivot. And what we did with that was create visuals and interactive activations, you know, like multiple screen activations that tell that story in a way that engages people. So, you know, you're talking about like a large screen, sort of six. How wide would that be? How wide was the world? There's about 12 screens in the world, 12 55-inch screens.
Yeah.
About, I don't know, 15 foot, something like that, across the wall. And that was a visualization of a potential future world, and that's all rendered in real time in Unreal Engine, and you can interact with that world. And that world is about Ford telling you how they see the future and how they see them fitting into the future of mobility. So it's not just about cars, it's about bikes, it's about transit in general.
Right.
And it's about New York. So yeah, again, I wouldn't call it data viz, I would call it visualization.
Right.
Yes.
And that was using the Unreal Engine is a gaming engine, correct?
Yes, that's right. We sometimes use the Unreal Engine. If there's a need for large amounts of 3D geometry, gaming engines are kind of where it's at.
Right.
We've always shied away from them and for large scale, kind of, you know, like building size projections and LED systems, because they don't necessarily provide the performance and throughput that you need on a large scale. You know, there's a difference between looking at something on a 24-inch monitor and looking at something on the side of a massive building. You know, that's just a technical consideration. But yeah, we are moving more into Unreal, but we also do a lot of very low-level coding as well, like the Stock Exchange and Morgan Stanley. were all done in raw C++ and OpenGL just for performance.
And what was all that showing?
Which one, sorry?
The stock exchange for Morgan Stanley.
The stock exchange is an installation installed within their headquarters in London. And that is, it's across, I think, 7 computers all synchronized across. It was in an atrium across multiple screens. Yeah, 500 of these Christie microtiles. And that is a visualization of the various markets that they have. So it's the FTSE 100, it's the AIM 100, it's the bonds market, it's the government bonds or gilts market. And that is a kind of, it's a marketing piece, essentially. So when they take people around and they're trying to get them interested in, say, for example, floating on their exchange, it's how they show those people and how they show the world that they're an innovative, forward-thinking company. So they you know, it's about innovation, it's about speed. You know, they want to show that they're the fastest exchange in the world, that they have the best data in the world, that there's a lot of activity on their market. So we wrote a data visualization that was a galaxy of stocks all spinning around this central light,
right,
which represents the exchange. It's like, there's a big sort of lens flare coming out of it. And that uses, direct connection to the exchange. So it's updating, hundreds of times a second.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the FTSE's going, on a big day or an opening or close of trading, you can see the activity is insane. It's not the sort of thing actually you can do on the outside of buildings. Like Morgan Stanley, we had some data viz for financial data, but because it's outside, because there are different licensing and restriction, you can only update every 5 minutes. So you can't show the kind of the activity in the market because there's an insane amount of data happening in financial data. And the stock exchange was a good way of us kind of showing what we could do with that, because we could harness, you're running at 60 frames per second, you've got like 4K screens, massive 4K screens. You can show how much is going on. And it's quite impressive to look at, actually.
Yeah, I'm remembering it now. That goes back about 5 years, correct?
Yeah, I think we've, 4 years maybe, something like that, yeah.
Big atrium.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's one.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
I would imagine that working with financial data, while challenging, as you say, with the volume of it and everything, that's probably a pretty easy one to work with because it's already highly reliable and properly structured, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's quite raw, the financial data.
Okay.
It is reliable. These are enterprise systems. There are traders relying on this. But in terms of accessibility, it's actually quite hard because it's very low level stuff. It's not like an API that you might be, one of a 10,000 users. So you're using a web API from Google or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You may be one of 7 or 8 users on one of these feed APIs. So it's pretty low level. It's pretty hardcore stuff. It's pretty hard to do, actually. That was quite a surprise.
Mm, okay. So with all the buzz in the last 2-3 years about Internet of Things and everything's going to have a sensor, everything's going to be IP connected and sending back data to central repositories. Do you guys see that as something that's opportunistic and you can start to apply to not only show that data, but use that data to influence and shape content?
Not sure how wide, I guess, Internet of Things is relating to, but I think we've been looking recently at beacons and personalizing content. So I'm not sure if the, you know, this fully answers your question, but we've been looking at, like, say somebody walks past the Morgan Stanley building and the, you know, there's a wireless access point that picks up your MAC address in your phone. And there are companies that are tracing these MAC addresses and, you know, have access to your data, and they have, some of them have a pretty good idea about who you are, mm-hmm. or where you're from or where you've been, and you can build patterns up around people. Even though they might be an anonymous person, you still might know that that person has traveled to a certain train station every day, 5 days a week for the last year. Mm-hmm. So you can start to put up personal, you know, personalized information for that person. That's what we've been looking at recently. So that's just an extension of dynamic content. And that, I think, is something that I see happening more and more in the next 3 or 4 years. The Internet of Things, I mean, the example I keep hearing is that every time you run out of milk, your fridge orders you some new milk. Yeah. And I've heard that for the last 5 years, and I'm still buying milk in you know, in the supermarket. So I don't know where that is. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the sensors that probably have pretty pedestrian purposes and purposes in manufacturing and all that. And I often use the example of crop moisture sensors that, you know, are out in fields in, you know, whatever country it is, and to be able to pull in that data and start to reflect moisture conditions across an agricultural reason for a fertilizer company or whatever. I think you could start to build really interesting visualizations around that, that as a single entity, that little sensor is just spitting out a number and somebody somewhere cares about it. But to roll those up, you could start to show something really, truly interesting with it.
Yeah. I think you're right. Maybe the Internet of Things is the, I think sensors and information and data is probably where it's at. The more information you can get, the more you can put that into your visualization and find somebody that's interested in that. I think the Internet of Things has probably confused me because of all the bad examples I've seen.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of hype, not a lot of good examples out there. And yeah, I agree. Do I really need a fridge with a TV screen on it? And
yeah. Do you have one?
Not convinced.
No. I mean, maybe we've been looking at algorithmic intelligence as well. We're thinking maybe that's something.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are making the shift there from talking about artificial intelligence to algorithmic intelligence, which kind of seems to be blurring the lines between search and kind of pure neural nets. And I think that's something that seems to be flourishing. I'm not sure where that fits in with us, but we're keeping our eye on it and trying to find companies who may be interested in doing visualization based on it. Uh-huh. And that's the thing we're interested in.
Well, I think there will come a day within 5 years, certainly 10 years, where there's going to be an awful lot of large digital displays and just, you know, large monitors that are going to have content showing on those screens that is largely determined by what's going on around them. It's taking analytics by camera and other sensors of what the crowd is like, how long they're dwelling, but also other conditions, and trying very hard to contextually drive what's on the screen based on what's relevant to those people in that area at that moment. I absolutely think that'll happen. It's not going to happen so much with rendered video, but certainly with motion graphics and, you know, web driven graphics.
Yeah, I think that's where real time graphics really shine. Mm-hmm. You can create a custom graphic. You're not relying on video. I mean, we do a lot of video, but it's not what we're really into. We incorporate video into our visualizations, but it doesn't have the flexibility.
Right.
You know, you can't have a multifaceted kind of multidimensional result from video. You can only kind of scrub through it or change a video from one video to another.
So how does the process work with a new customer or with an existing company that says we want to do something? I would imagine there's this delicate balance you have to strike between creative and technology, particularly when somebody says we want to create a VR experience, or we want probably more apt for this discussion, we want to do a big video wall in our lobby and they're talking about the thing as opposed to what the thing is going to show.
Yeah, that's always the case, actually. I think hit the nail on the head there. A lot of clients come to us and say, you know, we're making a video or we're doing this or we're doing that. And essentially they're talking about what they want to make rather than what they want to achieve. Mm-hmm. So we try to take a few steps back. Sometimes it's too late and they've already bought millions of pounds worth of stuff and we help them, you know. But essentially you need to find out what they're trying to achieve. Is the business model or the model of the project or what is it they're trying to achieve? And then we try and work towards what they're trying to achieve. But at the same time, we want to make something that we want to make. We want to make something always different and interesting. So we're not going to, you know, we're not going to suggest something that we think is uninteresting. It may be not, maybe not what the client's expecting. You know, the stock exchange, for example, wanted us to quote on making some new videos. And we felt that you know, for their atrium, they've already had videos and it wasn't very interesting. And we went out on a limb and suggested something different. And, you know, some people say that's a, you know, it's taking risks and that's what works. But maybe it was a risk or maybe it was us saying that we didn't want to do anything else. And we thought this was the right way to go. And if they just wanted videos, perhaps we wouldn't have been interested. So, you know, I think it has to be about what the client wants, but you have to put a lot into it yourself and guide them and try and convince them and get them to take a risk and perhaps take a little bit of a risk yourself. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise nothing changes and nothing moves on. And ultimately the client wants something that no one else has got. And you have to convince them that in order to do that, they have to do something new. That's generally how we approach the work. And then that's meeting number one. And then, you know, it goes on. It's the standard production process. It's creative. It's, you know, it's directing. Mm-hmm. It's the whole thing. That's pretty standard amongst production companies and post-production. It's just that our tools are different.
Right.
In which in real time, we're talking data. But
Is there any more of a demand because you're using, in some cases, data, and you know it's about numbers and it's about data that's available to them, that there's more of a requirement for measurability, accountability, a return, as opposed to a pure piece of creative where it's, you know, it's almost impossible to quantify whether it's working or not.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. The ROI. Return on investment is always something that comes up.
Uh-huh.
And we're not experts in that. Mm-hmm. So we're not marketing guys. We deal with a lot of marketing people and they're talking about ROI, but a lot of this stuff is very difficult to measure.
Right.
And I think we've expected our clients to go out on a limb. And I think they've realized that they've had to, because if you put, you know, if you spend millions of pounds putting some new LED and new content on your building, it's very difficult to measure whether you've got value for money in terms of how, you know, have you made those millions back and more or not. I think it's almost impossible to measure.
Right.
So the companies seem to be coming round to that fact. You know, we're not talking about, it's not like the internet where you're talking about views and click-throughs and, you know, you can come up with analytics and graphs and metrics that justify things to your clients. We've never tried to do that because I don't know any way of doing it.
Well, plus you're the creative guy, so you can look at the business development guy and tell him or her,
yeah,
sort that out.
Yeah, I have no idea how to do that. You go do it.
Is there a project that you can talk about that you guys are working on right now that really has you excited?
It's difficult. I mean, as you say, we're the creative guys. There's a lot of NDAs and all sorts of things.
Right. But without naming names.
Okay, so we're doing some updates. There's a couple of things I've just been told by Johnny here that we're doing some updates to Ford. Some sort of interactive, more interactive content within the Ford Hub, mm-hmm. And potentially some updates to our other existing projects as well. There are new projects. But I can't say I can't say anything about those, unfortunately, apart from they're much bigger than the projects we've done before.
And that's the bane of anybody who's trying to market this stuff is the larger the project, the less likely you're going to get permission to ever say that you even did it.
Yeah, exactly. And they go on for a long time. Uh-huh. You know, this is the thing that you might work on you might be pitching on a project for a year and then working on it for another 2 years before you could even say you've worked on it.
Is there a piece of technology right now that gets you guys excited, whether it's a display canvas, software, you know, the power of graphics cards and everything now is kind of mind-blowing?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that we're really interested in, like augmented reality, like mixed reality stuff. We're getting into that. Also, the power of computing, as you're saying, is getting to the point where we're talking about very, very large installations. Like we're dealing with some architectural stuff at the moment. So it's not just one screen in one lobby, you know, it's the entire campus or it's the entire building, you know, it's huge things like that. I mean, that's obviously the 3D capability is there to do whatever we want, but it's the power and the throughput to put that mm-hmm. through on a large scale. That's what we're going for at the moment. We're kind of moving across platforms as well. So, yeah, we're looking at smaller devices as well. So not only on the kind of high end of throwing four NVIDIA graphics cards in a huge computer, we're looking at going down in scale to the smaller kind of, you know, mobile phone chipsets to do smaller installations. And that's where a lot of innovation is as well, on the small side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even a little Raspberry Pi, you can get a lot out of that now.
Yeah, and you've got, you know, a lot of the mobile phone chipsets, they're all system-on-chip stuff, and they've all got pretty good graphics on them. And if you take away the screen and the battery of a mobile phone, that stuff costs about $60. Mm-hmm. It's really impressive. And it's very young at the moment. It's all Android at the moment, but things are moving into Linux. And, you know, we buy stuff. You know, we buy Raspberry Pis, we buy Raspberry Pi 2s, we buy little Odroids and things like that. And a lot of them end up in a drawer. Mm-hmm. You know, because we haven't managed to, it's not quite there, but we're always watching it.
Uh-huh. All right, guys. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.